Blog Talk Radio.
What's she said?
Good evening. Welcome to Human Rights Demand. Leona Brando, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful.
How are you, Mary?
I'm doing well, thank you. I believe your guest is on the air as well. Good evening to you both, and welcome to the audience.
Well, thank you.
Yes, we've asked Gerald Bowling. He is the founder of Bridges for Change to be on the show. He is our featured guest today, and he's going to be talking about his role as the founder of Bridges for Change and also a few other topics I find everyone will be interested in. So how are you, Gerald?
I'm doing fine today. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your programs?
Yeah, well, my name is Gerald Bowling. I'm 47 years of age. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And my organization stands around some dilemmas I was actually having when I was going back and forth in and out of prison. And one of those things was I didn't have any concrete person out here to help me and steer me in the right way, in the right direction. So in 2009, I took this to heart and made it up as my little project on the side when I was working. So I started helping ex-offenders who I now call restricted citizens and their transition from moving from jail outside, which we started calling as sidewalk therapy. We did this in accordance with just having something for these folks to do, other than return back to the same things they was doing, you know, doing out here in the streets, selling drugs, you know, committing crimes or things of that nature. And we found out that by doing this, we were able to help some folks, you know, turn their life in a better way.
That's great. And this is all in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Do you plan on expanding it any time to other states in the future?
Yes, I would love to. I'm associated with a lot of groups, as your former group, and also a group called All of Us or None, and I'm tying in with them and seeing what we could do to help stop this massive incarceration and massive what we want to call and I don't want to be too harsh when I say this, but it's just the genocide of our people. You know, we want to stop that.
And we hear that from a lot of advocates, too, and exactly the wording you said, genocide. But you had mentioned, too, that you're actually partnershipping or you're in the process of partnershipping with other advocacy groups and organizations, like All of Us or None?
Yes, I would like to. There's a few other folks that I would like to, you know, try to get to, because I understand my understanding of this whole process is that we need collaboration. And that doesn't just mean in one city, because this is a nationwide epidemic for our folks, you know. We've been murdered. We've been put in jail for long, lengthy sentences that sometimes are unjustified. We have prisoners being beat. We have prisoners being missing who are supposed to be located in one jail, now they're missing. When we come out in the streets, we had the same kind of thing. You know, we had the domestic abuse thing going on, you know, with fathers who can't find housing or work out here, and it's just destroying us as a people. So, you know, that's basically where Bridges for Change is standing at, that we need to kind of collectively get together as people who want to see this race of folks start to get higher up on the ladder.
Yeah, I one of the reasons why I was so impressed with your organization, Bridges for Change, is for that reason, because so many people, when they come out of prison, they have nothing, and that's why the recidivism rate is so high. They come out, they don't have the housing or the counseling or the health care or the employment. So Bridges for Change is, and I know there was a time when you actually made a call on a case that I had, a case that we're working on. It was an emergency situation, and you made a call to some politicians, and you were able to, you know, to give that support to that family. I think that Bridges for Change is an awesome program. And one of the things I noticed, too, and I say this all the time, we live in a country where there's an epidemic. There's an epidemic of mental illness. There's an epidemic of addictions. And there's an epidemic of police brutality, brutality in the prisons. And this thing that happened in Missouri with Michael Brown is a clear indication of how serious the problem is in this country. And so you really hit it on the spot when you talk about these issues that are out there. And if you can just expand a little bit more on that too, Gerald, I'd appreciate it.
Well, one of those things is speaking about the young man, and God bless him and his family, and I hope that they're getting through this process. One thing a state legislator from Pennsylvania, she had put up on her post was, I guess, P. Diddy and them and Rick Ross and them made a record from this. I don't actually know the name of it, but my thing is this, that we should stop exploiting our folks and exploiting the tragedy of this for profit. You know what I mean? It's so many cases going around like this. It's like the lady, the family that's in Detroit also, their house was kicked in and their 7-year-old little daughter was shot, killed. And now they're going back again. And then it's like the other brother, I forget his name offhand, but he fell inside of a mat at school. And during the autopsy, when the family haven't re-exhumed, he had no inside body parts. From the brain to the liver was gone. And he was put back up with newspaper. And then, of course, Trayvon, you know, It's just so much of this stuff going on, like on a daily basis. But the only thing, we're not getting the full extent of it. We're only getting patches of it, hit misses here and there. And then we got our own people who are splitting this, like Reverend Al Sharpton and all the rest, Michael Bazin. You know, you could go on and on because, you know, they stood out there for Trayvon. They said all this stuff for Trayvon, but it's still nothing that's happening. If you recently looked in the news, this guy's a maniac. He's running around with guns. He's going crazy. The guy who killed him, I forget his name.
Zimmerman. George Zimmerman. Zimmerman.
Yeah, he's running around with guns, you know what I mean? And it's just a travesty to us as a people who have been here, who have shaped and molded this country also, that we'll be treated like fourth or fifth class citizens in our own nation. You know what I mean? We built this nation. No others have done it the way that we have done it. And I think that, you know, this exploitation of our own self has to stop. It has to stop.
I get really upset myself because, as you say, we built this country too. So many of our ancestors, so many of our relatives in the past, they fought for this country, and yet they didn't get the recognition that a lot of people get today, you know, and they were put in the battlefields. They were put in the worst places possible, and the same thing's happening out here in the country. It's almost as though we have a divided government. We have people in other countries protesting about this Trayvon Martin and about this Michael Brown case. When other people from other countries are that infuriated that they are also protesting, that's a clear indication that they sense the problem. They see it themselves. If they can see it, then why doesn't everyone in this country see it?
Well, that goes, that made me just think about my brother out there in San Francisco. I'm not going to mention his name. But a true brother to me, I'll let you speak with him.
Mm-hmm.
Right then. What he talked about, and what he stands for is, you know, for us to make sure that we okay, you know what I mean, and stop depending on somebody else to make sure we all right. You know, it's just again a travesty how we think and how we position ourselves to be underneath somebody's foot. You know what I mean? We have to get out this dilemma or this thinking or behavior pattern that we're in, because as you see these days going. Right now in Philadelphia, they're talking about if they don't get a $2 cigarette tax, they're going to be closing the schools down by Christmas. You know what I mean? Now that's preposterous to think that, you know, that if these folks are going to stake all this time and money because they don't have a plan B. They said that on national TV that they're going to put all their resources, whatever else it is, in the $2 cigarette tax, knowing that if they drive the price up, people might don't smoke. So one of the bills that they had on the table was legalizing marijuana here in Philadelphia. So I wanted to see how far that goes to help our schools out in the upcoming months that we have.
I say this legalizing of marijuana, I mean, it was so illegal for so many years until the politicians that we're getting in now are much younger, or they have loved ones that are young and doing the marijuana, and this is their way of protecting their loved ones or protecting themselves from getting busted, as they would say. So everything that they're making legal these days is only because it's in their families. That's
right.
The way I look at it. And
right.
As far as the taxes, I mean, if they can't get this tax, what you're saying is they're going to have to make some adjustments in the school system. Why don't they make it in someplace else, in the political area or somewhere else, whereas it's not going to affect the children in school and it's not going to affect the families, the low-income families or the middle class. It's going to affect the ones that can actually afford to pay these things.
Well, that's just the plight of what we're talking about. And one of those things that I was doing research on was that in mostly predominantly black neighborhoods, you'll see that we do not hold any business structure at all. We do not own our own business sector. Our business sector is run by either the businesses that are in there are foreign. Everybody's foreign to us, whether they're European, whether they're Indian, whether they're Asian, Islamic now, and I forget the other people who came in also. I think it was the Greeks. You know, they have all the stores in our neighborhood, especially in Pennsylvania. I don't know how it is all over, but the Chinese stores are being replaced by the poppy stores. Like every block there is that's what they routinely call poppy stores, but they're Spanish stores, convenience stores. And they're on almost every block. And how can we generate some money within our community and ourselves if we're not putting into ourselves? There's been talk about, you know, making that dollar touch at least five or six black hands before it go out of that circulation of black hands into somebody else's hands. And I think that would be very wise for us to do because we need to spend money here in our neighborhood and we need to fix our neighborhood up. I mean, like, it's a travesty that we don't have anything set aside for ourselves.
You know what, I just...
Can I interrupt, Leona? I just want to say how glad we are to host Leona Brando, Justice Advocate. This is a program on Human Rights Demand Channel where you can call in and get involved. You can call in and speak to Ms. Brando and her guest. The telephone number to call in is 347-857-3293. Again, the telephone number for you to call in and ask questions or make comments about this very interesting subject matter today is 347-857-3293. And Ms. Brando, you do have a caller on 5405. Let me know when you're ready to take calls.
Okay. Would you like to
take
that now?
Well, yes, we can let your caller speak now. 5405, how are you?
Hi, good evening, Mary and Leona. It's me, Anna. How are you doing today, ladies?
Good.
Hello,
as a matter of fact,
Anna,
I was going to actually have you come on towards the end because I wanted you to give us an update on your son.
Okay.
Okay, so right now what I wanted to do, though, going back to what Gerald was saying, you mentioned the getting things going in the communities, getting things going where you can the minorities or the lower class or middle class can actually get something going in the communities. I wanted to say this in talking about people helping. As you know, I just stepped down from the organization I had, and I don't really plan on going into any organizations to try to work with them. But I do want to offer, Gerald, I want to offer my assistance as a researcher and a recruiter. I would love to start recruiting people to actually work with you and your organization. And I have a couple of people actually that are already interested in it. I would like to know from you, what kind of volunteers can you actually use in the work that you're doing?
Well, we can use volunteers as far as tutoring, because we do have a component to our program that does tutoring for ex-offenders and also for school students. We need them there, and also prison writing and prison visits, because we want to start not just writing our folks. We want to make sure that we go see them as well as we can, hoping that we can get out there once or twice a month to go and actually see the prison out there that's going through the dilemma they're going through.
Okay, and I think that's good, because it's very important to transition from prison to society. And I think it's good when the advocates can actually start working with the case managers at the prisons and trying to come up with a service plan prior to the prisoner coming out, or the client. As you say, they shouldn't be called prisoners. They should actually be called clients, which is something I was strong on. But that's what I'd like to see in all organizations when advocating for the incarcerated men and women, is to start the transition from inside and work outside. And there's a lot of students out there who want to do prisoner advocacy work, and that's exactly what they want to do, is to actually be able to go into the prisons and work with the prisoners from that point of it too. But for those that can't make it into the prisons, there are ways that they can call. They can connect via the telephone with the case managers at the prison or the chaplains. They can do the research for the programs on the outside. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
But can you just speak a little bit more, Gerald, about what you'd like to see happen?
Well, we like to see happen with our volunteers, and what we want to happen with our volunteers, that we're gonna be starting cleaning, cleaning the neighborhood initiatives. So we'll be like calling folks come down and volunteer at different cleaning sites, and we'll be like cleaning up little parts of the neighborhood and painting them and getting them straight and making them looking well, so that our children start taking pride in our neighborhoods. That's basically one thing we want to be doing. The other thing that we do in Bridges for Change is we do transitional housing. And that means if somebody has a substance abuse problem or might be suffering slightly from mental illness or just impoverished because they don't have a place to go, we'll find them the places for their needs. And on speaking on that level, we're actually trying to open up our own center and get the funding for it, because that's the hardest part, being an ex-offender and trying to get a loan from the government or some kind of agency to get a building and erected in that light of helping ex-offenders return successfully back to society. Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I missed that.
That's no problem.
Okay, so, when we tell people there's a radio show going on at 3 o'clock and they still call, it kind of is very upsetting. Jeez.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, we really want to appreciate you, Mr. What is your name, Balding?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for coming on air today and telling us about your program. Now, your program, is it primarily reentry services?
It's for the reentry population, also the impoverished population.
It's for the reentry population as well as the who?
impoverished.
Oh, impoverished.
Yeah,
whether or not they've been in prison, you help impoverished people. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, do you have a certain geographic area that you service, or are you nationwide?
Right now, I would love to be nationwide, but right now, we're just local. We're in actually Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We do work in all sectors around in Philadelphia. No, we have not gone out to the suburbs yet because we don't have the manpower to do that. So,
okay. You primarily service the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area.
Yeah.
Although isn't all of us are none, which you are connecting with, that's national, right?
Yeah, they're a national organization. Sorry about that. I didn't let you know too much about them if you guys didn't. They're an organization, and I'm going to be opening up a chapter here in Pennsylvania for this. And one of their precepts is that we do for ourselves. And They have different levels of understanding, as I would call it. They do drug and alcohol, but mainly they're in the business of helping us pass bills that will affect our future. One of the bills that they passed was, as you know, the voting for incarcerated folks. They take the it was called Ban the Box. So they got that done. Not only here, was started here in Pennsylvania, but it also carried over into California. They just now had a big convention out there, I think a month or two ago, out there for the same reason. So they're a good organization. It's called All of Us or None, .org, if you want to go to there. And then you can look up all the information that you need there. They have prisoners' rights, helping prisoners with their families. I mean, they got so many programs. Just go on the site and look yourself and, you know, pick something out and give somebody a call.
That's awesome. Now, Gerald, I was going to ask you again, the programs that you're going to be doing for reentry, are these programs that you want to establish yourself, or you want to have a contract with others in the community to provide these services?
Well, it should be twofold. We should have a contract that's going to be, you know, helping folks around in the community build their bases, and also working with the other established organizations. But we want to focus in on ourselves as being like our own little entity, that little bridgeway between prison and jail.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody touches that, and we think that we have that touch now. We think that we have the right resources in place to make that work right now. So we want that little piece for ourselves and help develop that. Right now we're working on a curative database that will indicate, you know, all these markers to show that these folks who are coming out of jail have actually changed their life, moved in a new direction, and now moving on to prosperity. Because one of the things is that everybody who comes from jail thinks that, you know, the only thing we can do is be laborers or whatever the case is, but we're more than laborers. We actually can run boards and we run businesses and all the such. So we don't want to be held down with that stigma as us being laborers.
Okay, but my question again is, do you already have these things in place, or is it something that you want to try to put in place? Like, for as far as employment, do you want to start something yourself to promote the hirings, or do you want to the counseling? Do you want to have your own type of counseling, or do you want to open your own halfway houses? How do you want to do this? Do you plan on contracting out, or do you want to get the funds to actually buy or build facilities for halfway houses or for transitional housing?
Yeah, that's the primary goal, but, you know, everybody got to crawl before they walk. So what we're going to do is just have a collaboration with different people and, you know, put our folks here and there until we're able to raise money and get money on our own.
Well, this is why I ask, because there's funds out there for things like that.
Okay.
As I said, I am not trying to or don't want to join any organization now, but I know the resources. I know how to find the places, the funders that fund those type of programs. So if it was funding you want to open or start a transitional housing facility or a halfway house or something like that, I could do the research. We could recruit people to help you as well as volunteers for researching, again, to maybe write letters, as you say, to the prisons, to send out applications, to do a lot of these things that you won't have to do, but you can give them the instructions on what you need.
Well, that would be fine, and I'm sorry, I wasn't aware about all this grant money going around. You know,
actually, you should check into the Pennsylvania government too, because I'm sure the government has funds for such things. But what I was going to say too is there's a lot of philanthropists out there that are for the cause, and also, there's funding sources that mail things out a lot of times about the type of grants that they're seeking, proposals that they're seeking from advocates. And those are the things where the volunteers could help out in a big way if
right.
you wanted to use them in that way, to do the research, actually to apply for the small grants or at least get the applications for you to
right.
do so.
But these grants, some of them I knew about them per se, but I didn't actually go with them because the thing of it is when you do a grant, they try to make everything go the way that they want it to go, being as though you're using somebody else's money. And if we're going to get funded or granted or anything of that nature, it had to be on our specific terms and goals, because nothing has been working out there for the ex-offender. As you see, recidivism rate is high, crime rate is high, a lot of other things are in the economic sector is happening to us to make it very unbalanced in a lot of ways. And the most part of it is now it's going to be like the crime is going to start going up. We want to kind of suppress all of this from the door. And we know we can do it because, you know, it's been done before. This is the actual program that has already been done and worked before. And I don't want to say as far as back as slavery, but it's one of those things that it's just basic re-education, you know what I mean, of how and what we need to do as citizens of this country or people of this country. So it's just basically taking a formula and putting it together and saying, like, you need to go this way instead of opposed to going that way, and what you're teaching us to do. I don't know who would probably want to support anything of that nature going forward with that, but I don't suspect that the guidelines that some grants may have will fit under them.
Well, you know, the thing is, what you have to do is make an effort. And what I see happening with our people is our people are so behind in times. They're so afraid to make the moves. And if a woman can form an organization and make it as big as New Vision Organization was, the one problem I had is what we're talking about right now is the funding. I didn't know how to seek. I didn't know. I mean, I found the grants. I found the fundings. I found the people that were willing to fund. But I didn't know how to apply for the grants, and I didn't have time because I was trying to recruit and keep the organization going. Unfortunately, I found somebody that is able or will be, I'm pretty sure, will be able to get the funds, but not having the same passion, not having the same the same agenda. So what you need to do is focus on one thing. You reach for the heavens, and even if you don't make it all the way to the heavens, you'll make it halfway. So if your goal is to go out and apply for grants for everything, because, Gerald, your program, Bridges for Change, it's a good program, and it's a program you don't hear about often. There's reentry programs out there, but not with the same passion that you have to help. Okay?
Right.
Not with somebody that's not only helping prisoners but helping homeless people, helping people in the communities. You've got it together. And all you need right now is you need to reach for the stars. Go for everything. Go for the funding, the grants. Go for the volunteers. And once the 501c3, get registered with United Way, with Volunteer Match, with all these programs out there where you can start bringing in volunteers for grant writing, for volunteers for prisoner advocacy work, case management, you know, fundraising. You can put it out there just like I had it with all those organizations. You can pull in these people and then give them assignments. You are the founder. You are the president of your organization. So what you want to do is you want to keep your goal, your mission, your goals, objectives, everything, and let others recruit for you. But when they recruit for you, make sure you know what you want the volunteers to do.
Right, right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
As I say, with what you have, there's not too many reentry programs like you. There's not too many people. And unfortunately, what happens with some of these people, when they get in an organization and they get a little bit of power, their focus changes from advocacy work to power and fame and money.
Right.
And that's why I disassociated myself with something that I worked many years to build. But
right.
I don't regret it because right now there's somebody, there's people working on that issue too. But
right.
what I say is what you have going for you, and people are going to want to work with you. They're going to want to work with an organization like yours because it has potential, and it has compassion, and it has a goal for the future to bring down the recidivism rate, to help prisoners, to help homeless people, to help anybody in the community that's struggling.
Right. That's all it said. Well, that's what Bridges to Change is. Yeah, simply that. And
yeah.
We have as you know, we've been out here for many years, and the reason why you know I sound so lackluster because of you know, and you know this too, all the work that you put in enduring this, and it seems like no reward is at there. You might get a couple people who got some jobs or whatever, and you know they out of their predicament or whatever, and they this and that. But that's just little you know stars on the way. But you know when we talking about our real passion, our real concept to really help a multitude of folks. You know what I mean? It gets in your head that you know what I mean. It's this dark cloud over here stopping me from you know. Reaching or ascertaining whatever heights I'm trying to get to. So that's all that is. But, you know, working hard by yourself and trying to hold a whole city down is a lot of work. I can tell you that.
Twofold. First of all, you're not doing it alone. We have a higher power out there, mm-hmm. above all, that's going to be working with you, okay? That's the first thing you have to keep in mind. You have that higher power. Secondly, when I used to do social work, when I first started out as a technician, I had eight cases. I was very down because I was having success with some of them, but not all of them. And my superior at the time said to me, Leona, well, the people that we're working with are at the bottom of the barrel. They're at their lowest peak. If you can help one or two, that's a big thing. That's a miracle. So focus on helping just the few. And as time goes on, you watch and see when you progress how many others you're going to be able to help. But
right.
never get discouraged, Gerald, if you can't help them all at one time, because it's going to, like you said, you got to build up.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it will happen.
Yeah. It's just that, Leona, the thing of it is, I done wrote proposals of place I done graduated SCEC. They already know the type work I already do. You know what I'm saying? I wrote a nice proposal to these folks, you know, to accomplish me some of that money that they get so that, you know, I can start making change for situations being restricted citizens or impoverished citizens, you know. And it seems to go in deaf ears, and I don't know whether or not that's because, you know, I come from that realm of incarceration or criminal justice background, and or they just don't think that, you know, this program is fitting for what they're trying to do.
No, they know.
And they're on that aspect. You know, John Wetzel, all of these folks, you know, coming on the scene and, you know, and doing this, you know, I remember a lot of the times, and just speaking about jail now, so since we can go on that, you know, I am the guy who was up in Camp Hill in the riot and, you know, and broke out the jail cells in there and, you know, and went through the brutality and the beating and being hung through the bars and all of that kind of stuff up there. So that's why I absolutely know that, you know, that this program has to infiltrate inside of the prisons, number one, but also be a bridge for them coming out here, a stable bridge where they can walk and go and do other things in life. You know what I mean? And it's where the whole concept of that comes from. So I can kind of think, like, you know, I can thank Camp Hill for the riots that did to make Bridges for Change today. You know what I mean? To show folks that we can make it on this side over here. It's our only thing we have to do is just put our best foot forward and stay focused.
Unfortunately, there's so many in prison that are not getting out. I mean, it's the way they've set it up is so that most prisoners, they're not going to get out, especially if they are minorities, people of color. But
yeah.
but I was, like I said, I was out in Pennsylvania twice. I was in January of 2008 and also of April of 2008. And the same thing rallying because of the deaths in the prisons there. But another thing I was going to tell you, as far as advocacy, one of the things you'll learn, if you haven't already learned it, throughout the years, you're going to have other advocates that are going to either be for you or against you.
Mm-hmm.
You might have some advocates that are going to be jealous because you're really doing what you need to do and you're
mm-hmm.
sincere, where it might make them look a little bad. So look for, throughout the years, what you're going to have to be able to do is discern those who are really trying to help you, those who are trying to help prisoners, and those who are just out there trying to bring you down or bring the organization down or bring the prisoners down. Because we find them, even in our own race, we find
yeah.
we have oppression. So we have to be very very mindful of who we're associating with, if they're sincere or if they're not.
Right.
You mentioned something about Al Sharpton, and I remember the Action Network years ago. I thought that was the best place to call for help. But not anymore. It's become political, and now it's more like he's got his own radio show. I mean, television show, and you know he's become more political. So I don't even know who's running the Action Network, if anybody now.
Well, one thing I'm not going to do is fall into his trap. Or any other person I see out there who says they're politically involved, you know, in stopping the deaths of the dark and hue people, as I can so delightfully call them. It's like, again, it's a travesty to see people making money off of somebody else's hurt,
pain,
and
tragedy,
and pain. And what I say, you know, if I can be so frank to say it, that, you know, these people themselves need to be kind of like castrated to me, who bring lies in front of their own people and tell their people to believe lies. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. It's like maybe a couple, in my mind, maybe 9 or 10 months ago, maybe a year or better, you know, everybody was wearing a hoodie. You know, everybody had their hoodie, you know, their hoodie with Trayvon face on the hoodie shirt. You know, now it's another brother who's getting killed, Michael Brown. You know, and now they trying to put, everybody got their hands up in the air. You know what I mean? I'm never going to do that, because I don't care if I see a police officer or whatever kind of officer they have now. I'm a human being and I'm a human citizen, so I'm not going to see you and you ask me a question, I'm going to put my hands up. That's not going to happen. You know, and I think that, you know, just for the shock value, it was fine, but now it's not fine. So everybody, you know, they should rethink that. You know what I mean? And stop putting their hands up in the air when they see a police officer will be questioned by one.
No. You know what I have a problem with, too, is there's been prisoners who have got won lawsuits. They've They've won major lawsuits for the tortures and abuses they've gone through while incarcerated. And yet they come out. There was one that he ended up with the $5 million award for the what he went through. And they say that he's out there doing drugs. He's wasting all the money foolishly. And I'm saying when they get that kind of money, if they even donate 100,000 of that to programs like yours or start their own, they could be helping rather than get this money and give it right back to the state. With, you know, it doesn't make sense. I'm saying sometimes our people are really crazy because they don't know how to take a good thing and do something positive with it and build on it.
Well, Leona, just stop me there. You know what I mean? I don't know the circumstances around the young brother or whoever the brother was, but I understand, you know, his psyche about that. You know what I mean? Why he's probably doing drugs, you know? You know, and when they get you in those type situations, you know, it's life or death for real. You know, it's not a game. It's nothing to play with. You know, it's nothing like, you know, it's going to be, you're going to cut it on and tomorrow you can cut it back on and everything's fine. And I can understand the mental torture that he probably went through. I mean, I was in Camp Hill after the riot and you know, I was subjected to be beaten, all of these things that happened. I was put down underneath Camp Hill's jail for 8 months down there, butt naked, with the windows open, you know what I mean, trying to freeze me. You know, I was the only food I would eat was really apples and drink toilet water, you know, because I didn't really trust them, and they wasn't really trying to do nothing for me down there. So the thing of it was, I just put my mind in survival mode, you know what I mean, and this guy probably never clicked out of that mode yet. He doesn't know how to act.
No, that guy wasn't tortured. He was wrongfully convicted. There were many of them who were exonerated. One of them who went in for, unfortunately, was tortured because he was accused of a child molestation, and he was in for like 19 years. He came out, and they said he ended up committing suicide. But the one that was, one of them that was in wrongfully convicted, he served, I think it was 16 years. He came out, and he's the one. But also with Camp Hill, I'm very familiar with Camp Hill, and I'll tell you, I have no use. That's a place they should have closed down anyway. Not to say the others are any better, because SCI Smithfield is pretty bad. And Fayette is pretty bad. And Frackenville, to me, is pretty bad. So there's a lot of prisons out there that are, to me, that are not good in Pennsylvania. But Camp Hill is the worst. And I know that Schmiel, the superintendent who ended up at SCI Smithfield, his wife, Shirley, is at Camp Hill. And they said she walked by and saw a prisoner being abused or tortured, and she smiled or laughed and just kept going. And that's the kind of mentality you have of people in the system. But when it's your own color that's laughing about it, I mean, she had to be sick.
Well, then again, you got to know, Leona, that's what kind of behaviors you're dealing with, because we hate each other from when we look at each other. We don't like each other. We got some kind of problem with each other. You know, but that's a tort behavior. It can be eradicated with us just getting in the commonality of just being people. We allow everybody else to come in our neighborhood except us. Why are we killing each other? Why are we letting everybody else feed off our flesh? It doesn't make sense. It really
also
doesn't.
Also, the social status. You get people of color that get a little bit of power, and they forget where they come from, and that's what I don't like, is when they forget where they come from and they think they're better than the brothers and sisters that are struggling because they somehow made it to the top. And they could be the best influence to help these people, but they don't. They end up thinking because they made it to the top, now they're a different race. They think they're white, and unfortunately, the white man doesn't believe they're white. It's like Cape Verdeans. It's like Cape Verdeans and Africans. Cape Verdeans are Portuguese and Africans, and they will acknowledge most of them acknowledge the Portuguese side, but they don't want to acknowledge the African side. But yet the Portuguese people don't want to acknowledge the Cape Verdeans because they're looking at them as being the Africans. So why do people try to be something they're not or try to withdraw from something they are? You know, that's what gets me, is when people forget where they came from. because of their social status or because of whatever it might be, when people forget who they are, and today, in today's day and age, it doesn't matter if you're African, African-American, Hispanic, Asian, Chinese, Indian. It doesn't matter. You're all, if you're of color, you're of color. There's hatred out there. There's racism out there.
Right.
I was down in Florida one time, and I went in the store, and I asked the lady how much the tax was on something I was getting, and she looked at me like I was crazy. I'm supposed to know. I told her, listen, I'm not from Florida. I don't know your rules or your taxes. So I was telling some of the brothers down there about it, and you know what they said? They said, Leona, where you come from up there is worse than down here, because down here we know where we stand. Up there, they smile in your face and stab you behind the back, and that's the mentality of a lot of people in the North, too.
Right, but I just want to comment on your thing talking about people don't know exactly where they came from. Yeah, I think they do, but they just don't want to come back. That's the thing with me. You know, they know exactly where they came from, but they just don't ever want to come back.
But I look at the ancestors. I want to remember how strong they were. They went through a lot so that we could be where we are today.
And where are we?
We're not. We're more educated about. I mean, we may not be as progressed as we'd like to be, but we know now. We know that it's not like it was then when they were getting beaten and tortured and everything and going nowhere, breastfeeding the white man's baby. And the white man today forgets. If it wasn't for the ancestors, they probably wouldn't be here today.
Well, to me, that's a real touchy subject. When we talk about ancestors, we talk about people who were unlearned primarily. They did all their learning by trial and error. And we're here now in 2014 with our high super intelligence and all of this stuff that we got, and we're not even smarter than they were in their days and times.
No, because of this divide and conquer. That's what it is.
And we can no longer blame it on divide and conquer, because we're able to see now. Like when we weren't able to see, right, that made it work. But now we're able to see. We're able to see what's happening here. It's not no cloud over this. We get instant, like the thing in St. Louis, Michael Brown. We get instant eyewitness right on what happened, right on the scene. And we see that, you know, we're not looked at as human beings, but we're looked at as still as animals or cattle or chattel or someone else's property who doesn't really doesn't mean anything in the span of life, because they don't even have anything to bring to the table in life. You know, and I think one of the doctors I was just listening to, he said that, you know, in 140 years ago, the black person's wealth in America was 0.5%. You know what I mean? And he said today, the black man's wealth is 1.5%. Today. And that's 140 years later. And we did all these rule changes. Some of them worked, some of them not. We wanted to be included. We wanted to be integrated. We wanted to do all of these things. But we forgot the biggest thing. We never said we wanted to be free. We never did. When we thought about our freedom, we thought about integrating and with them. It wasn't a total freedom. It wasn't a freedom set by itself. It wasn't. It was a freedom being freed inside of whatever their lifestyle was. And we still do it to the dust. So like we're living in this imaginary world that they had made for us, and that we still believe in, knowing that we have all the evidence in front of our feet right now.
You know what being free is to me? is not giving a hoot what people think or care about. And everybody feels like they have to impress their peers. They have to impress the next person. But you know what? I have had enemies, and I do get enemies all the time because I speak my piece. And I don't care what people think about me because my focus is helping somebody, especially right now the incarcerated men and women, that's my focus. I'm not going to care about anybody else. My organization, I could have fought for that organization. I could have fought in tooth and nail to take that away. I don't care. You know why? Because like somebody said, the new management will bring it down on their own. I don't have to do it. Because when somebody starts putting their personal feelings on the internet about their feelings about immigrants and their feelings about Obama and their feelings about this and their feelings about that, they're going to bring themselves down because you cannot work with the clients that are incarcerated who some are immigrants, who many are of color, who we have a president who's doing a job just as good, if not better, than anybody else, yet none of them are doing it good because none of them are any good. We got a divided government, but we got a government that right now, okay, in that incident in Missouri, that police officer, he should have been arrested just like anybody else. They didn't do it. So where is the White House in all of this? Or where is the U.S. Department of Justice? They should be saying, this man needs to be incarcerated until we can get this investigation over.
Well, he was down there. Eric Holder was down there.
He's there, and he's planning on staying. He said even after the investigation, they're going to keep people down there. But as far as this police officer that did the shooting, he's still walking the streets. People are still demanding that he be arrested until the investigation's over. And they haven't done that. Anybody else would have been incarcerated.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. You got the top cop down there now.
Right. But what do we have a government for? What do we have an executive director of the U.S. Department of Justice is allowing this man to walk free when that person has the right, has the power to say no. He's no different than anybody else in this situation. He's going to have to be in jail until we can figure this out. Instead,
it's because we have no community loyalty or unity, and that's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. All that marching and all of that and all that protests and fighting, ain't none of them lawyers. I don't want to talk about them bad, but I don't think that any of them lawyers put together a plan to lock this boy up for the crime that he did. Did they even bring something to him? Did the prosecutor even do it? Did, was there any push from the black lawyers count? Whoever. Or the caucus. Where are the people who are professional in power? What are they doing?
That's it. That's what I'm saying.
You got Rick Ross and P. Diddy and them making money off of a tragedy down there. Like for real, I don't even want to say. But they shouldn't be doing that. Yeah, you know I mean, they should. You know, they should be getting stepped to straight up. You know what I mean?
We have,
you know, y'all out of pocket. You know what I mean? And you need to cut all that down. But again, you know, everything is about self and money.
We have advocates out there now, and I'll tell you, including the ACLU. But we have advocates out there now in organizations who.
Excuse me, I don't like
who,
the ACLU. So I'm not, I really don't. I really don't. Follow the ACLU, and I apologize for interrupting you like that. But every time I hear about them, my mind goes to Stephen Presser, and when after I was beaten, drugged, and all that, you know, around about three groups of guards stomped me almost into oblivion. They told him where I was at. And he did not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When those three prisoners down in SCI Smithville, Joe Hopewin, Joe Capper, and Clifford Finney, when those three prisoners were being tortured down there, I called the ACLU before each one of them died. And ACLU didn't do anything. ACLU, so many people have tried to get help from them, and it's either they don't have the funding or they don't have the manpower. This is ACLU, but what I started to say was places like ACLU and a lot of these people that are advocates out there in organizations, they wait until somebody dies and then they get involved because they know there's big money involved. But let them try to get involved when somebody's crying for help that their son or their daughter might be committing suicide, or because their son or their daughter might end up being tortured. Whatever the case may be, they're not there. But yet, as soon as they hear that somebody has been tortured or somebody has been killed and there's a big lawsuit or their lawyers involved, all of a sudden they become big shots. They want to be in the middle of it all. That's the type of advocacy work I despise. And ACLU, I have no use for them. I have no use for Amnesty International. I called them one time on a case. And what did they do but give me their London office number? I said, what am I calling London for when you're right here in the United States? That's our headquarters. So even Amnesty International, I like to know what they're doing because I don't see anything being done in the U.S., although they're supposed to be international. All their work is supposed to be in other countries. But who's holding them accountable? Where's the transparency?
It's time for us to hold our own self accountable. How long are we want to keep on being exploited by the exploitation? It doesn't make sense. So our thing should be, and this is real. What I'm trying to do with Bridges for Change down here, we're trying to take the neighborhoods. I know you called them minority, but I understand we're the minority in the whole. But if we take it down to that micro side, that just that neighborhood, in that neighborhood that we live in, we're the majority. So being the majority in that neighborhood, right, we can put things in there that benefit us. You understand, and this is the type thing that we should be doing all over the nation here, taking our minority communities, that they call minorities because now we're the majority in them, run them out of there with their stores and all of that and the exploitation, and bring everything back to us, and we can work together to build what we need to build for ourselves. You know what I mean? Because one of my biggest things is, I haven't heard of, or I haven't seen, and I don't know. So if anybody out there can help me, I would like to know where our doctors are at. I would like to know where, there's an actual university for black doctors going there, black brain surgeons, a farm, these type things that we need to live in life, and have our own life. We have no control over anything. And it's so sadly said when I'll be talking to Muslim people, and they be like, well, yeah, brother, I don't eat pork. I just start to laugh because we don't have our own meat supply company, so you don't know what the hell you're eating.
You got that right.
You know what I mean?
I say that all the time. Look at, they just had it not too long ago, if you saw it. They were serving maggots in the prisoners' food.
Mm-hmm.
Anna probably saw it on Facebook. It was all over Facebook for a while there. But what I was going to say is Madeleine Coburn, a lot of people know Madeleine. She's a big activist. But she's been an advocate for the Reginald Clemens case. Madeleine Coburn, back in 2008, she didn't like the way that her people were being treated in the community, so she ran for governor. She didn't get it. But this is a black woman that's going to run for the governor of Missouri because she wanted to see change. And even though she didn't get it, maybe that that's a good example for other people to follow.
Yeah.
If you got the education, go for it. You might not get it, but then again, who knows? People may be fed up with the system so badly that they probably would vote for a stranger or somebody that's just coming up in the political arena.
Yeah. Exactly. And well, that's where our hope lies. Our hope lies with every house, every street, every sector of the neighborhood that represents us in totality. We actually want to have control of it. Not saying that we're gangsters or nothing like that, but we want to have the fast food stores that's owned by us, the laundromat. The gas stations, all of that type stuff right there will be owned by, primarily, people of darky hue. And primarily the people who are enslaved here, who ancestrally was enslaved here, to have this privilege of owning their own neighborhood and doing for their own neighborhood again. I would just like to say the school system here in Pennsylvania is more like, the trend is going around the country with charter schools. They're being ineffective. They don't want to deal with our children. They have a no-tolerance policy. They put them out out. So one of those things, again, that Bridges for Change is tweaking and trying to do, and I need help with, is that we have a few buildings down here in Pennsylvania that we want to work on, and what we want to do is actually open up a school for people who again, you know, have touched the criminal justice system in any kind of way, minor or adult, and also the impoverished people who can't afford, certain things or fell out or whatever. A school or whatever, so we want to get them back in there and get them back retrained, so they can take on another life in a positive way, and I mean taking on another life, I mean that because they have to throw away the other life that's going to be dead to them now, and move according to the new surroundings and the new being that they're trying to impose on the world. Because I know that we can do it if we try it. If we even put this, you know, to measure and just try it, it'll work. Like I said, you know, there's so many people here in Pennsylvania crying about this and that, what somebody not doing for them, while we can do it for themselves. I was thinking while I was reading about our lady. She said, well, she's going through all these problems, and she said, well, Jesus, I'm going to wait on you, Lord, for you to help me. And she prayed this prayer forever. And, you know, and then when she finally passed away, she gets to meet the person of her desire, Jesus the Lord or what have you. And she said to him, well, Lord, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And he said, hey, after you prayed, you need to go do something about that.
That's it. Exactly.
You know, so, you know, that was one of the biggest things.
Like they say, God helps those who help themselves.
Yeah, so that was one of the biggest things. The church came around and had me stop, you know, complaining about what the white man was doing and the Egypt man and all these other men. You know, I had to just claim what kind of man I wasn't doing as a man. And, you know, and start moving in that light, you know, to start correct some of the wrongs that I was making knowingly and unknowingly that I was making. So, you know, if we can just get some support from Bridges for Change, that would be excellent, really excellent. And again, Bridges for Change is in partnership with a lot of folks, but two of the folks that I'll bring up is All of Us or None. Another group is called PAR, and they already do transitional housing all over the country.
PAW.
PARR.
Oh, PARR. What does that stand for? Do you know?
Yeah, PAR is the Pennsylvania Alliance for Recovery Registrants. Their national organization is called NAR. And that's the National Alliance for Recovery Residents. So you can look both up. Their headquarters is down there in Georgia where Mrs. Neal is at. So we do support these two groups because what they do is outline and try to help people get back on the right way and the right track of mind, as it seems. So for now, we're going to be working hard. Hopefully, I can hear from some of you guys. I want to give y'all my information, my Facebook feed. You might see on there, and I think I told you this before, Leona, that we had opened up a tutoring program in Bogota, Colombia, over there in South America, with one of my friends over there, and he has a little ice cream shop over there, so he lets the kids come there and do tutoring for our stage of Bridges for Change over in that country. And our other projects that we work on, it's just so much. I mean, it just get overwhelming. But we're trying to help the whole self, like, holistically, get our people back on their feet holistically. So that's just the bottom line with that.
Well, so Bridges for Change is not just in Pennsylvania; it's also in Colombia.
Yeah, Bogota, Colombia, South America. We may have like seven to eight participants in our tutoring program.
Okay.
So you go ahead.
So again, for volunteers who, for people that want to do volunteer work with your organization, can you just give your information again so they can contact you?
Yes, it's Bridges, B-R-I-D-T-E-S, the number 4, C-H-A-N-G-E, change, at gmail.com. You can hit Bridges for Change on Facebook. And our number is 267-231-3095.
3095.
Yes.
And it's Gerald Bowling.
Yes.
Founder.
Founder. And you know what I was thinking about, you know, there will be, and what we're doing here, there will never be any board. We're only going to have advisors.
Right. Never have a board of directors, because a board of directors can't do anything, really. They cannot see the transparency that's not there. But I think what you're doing, Gerald, is awesome. I'm going to recruit as many as I can, and I'm going to refer them over to you. And if you get too many, you can refer them to some of the other organizations. But I think what you're doing is great. And any way that I can help, you know how to contact me.
Yes, I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody coming on. My name is Gerald. I'm not no big guy, little you. I didn't come over here to give you this message of deliverance or anything. I just come here to put it on the table, see where you can help me and I can help you, so we can move along and be a strong nation. And one of the things I want to leave you with, my grandfather, his name is Austin Thomas, and he lived 102 years. And the thing that he did was miraculous, is that he got off the slave plantation which they was on, got some land, and he made it possible for people who he would never be able to see a day in his life to be able to enjoy that land. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I was probably the last kid that he saw, of his grandkids, he saw, you know, that little generation. But, you know, my grandkids can now, you know, or their grandkids can live off the land that he purchased and owned. You know what I mean? I'm like, he's a very dynamic person in my life, and like my hero, so to speak. So, you know, his name is Austin Thomas, and I just wanted everybody to know his name, you know, and appreciate what he's done for, you know, his family. You know,
those were the true warriors. Yeah, that's a testimony right there.
Yeah,
it's a testimony. It's people like your grandfather that give me the inspiration to move forward and not look back.
Amen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I appreciate y'all for having me on the show. Hopefully we can get on it again and tell y'all what some new things that we're doing. I can't forget this guy, my guy from Milwaukee, Dakota Irby. What's up? Shout out to him. I'm going to write a chapter in this book that he's developing. I'll send you the copy that they're going to send me, Leona, when I get it from them.
It's Dakota? Dakota what?
His name is Dakota Irby, Professor Dakota Irby, doctor. Yeah, he's a black brother out there in Milwaukee. Go to Milwaukee. He's a teacher at Milwaukee University.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we could have him on the show sometime.
Well, I'll ask him.
But I'd like to have you come back too, Gerald, at another time to give us an update on how things are going.
Oh, no problem. Anytime you want me here, I'll be here for it.
Okay, and one last thought. Years ago, when I was doing my research, I came across there's a lot of properties throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
government properties that are not being used. Actually, they were giving them away. I had a packet. I don't know what I ever did with that packet, but I'm going to. I have a lot of discs here that I put things on for the last 10 years. I'm going to try to find it and send it to you so that you can see all this government properties that they give away, and any condemned houses. If you can get those donated to you, you could probably do something with that. Have prisoners help you renovate it. And actually build it up to try to use it as a transitional housing or something.
That would be so great, because, you know, like, and this is what we always talk about, a village, you know, It's just so great because, like, I'm trying to twist my mind about how I'm going to get this, you know what I mean, and still trying to stay inside the work until I couldn't think, you know, out there like that. I only could think from right here, so that's a great thing to have other folks and other people around to help you and guide you through this process, you know what I mean? So I know this process is not for me to be alone.
No.
So again, I thank you. You know what I mean? I thank the listeners for listening to me today. I thank y'all for having me on. Ms. Neal, I thank you very much for your time and your patience. And, you know, God be with y'all all. And, again, you can call me at Bridges for Change, 267-231-3095.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show.
Number again. What is
thank
your
you for coming on the show.
Again?
Yes, give your phone and number again.
Hello? Yes.
Hello?
My number
could you say
two?
It slower for us Southerners?
Yes, I can. My phone number is 267-231.
Say it again.
That's 267-231-3095.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Gerald Bowling, and from Bridges for Change, and I hope to hear from you soon. And just let me know whatever it is that you need the research, and I'll be glad to do it for you. I really think what you have is an awesome program, and I want to help in any way I can to get you moving further ahead with this.
Well, I think them homes and them grant outlets would be very well for me. If somebody can help me get these grants written, that'd be fun and looking at these properties and getting these properties.
So I'll check that out.
I'm really ready to go. All right?
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, God be with y'all. Talk to y'all later.
You too. Now I'd like to bring on Anna Santiago. Anna has a son in a Pennsylvania prison. Who had received a couple of life sentences, and I wanted to get an update on that. So, Anna Santiago, are you with us?
Yes, Leo. Hi, Mary. I'm both here.
Hi, Anna. Can you give us an update on your son's situation? Oh, tell us a little bit about him first.
Okay. I went to see Nelson about 3 weeks ago. They gave me a special pass for 3 hours. Because now he's doing the SCG program at SCI Forrester. He's in level 3 now, so he should be out in population in January. That's when he was supposed to have our first contact.
How long was he in this program or in solitary?
No, before he started the program 18 months ago, he was in the RRL for almost 8 years in a lot, 8 years and a half in lockdown.
Jeez.
In order for him to come out of population, they forced his hand to do the SCG program.
That's the only way. That's a program where if they do it, that means admittance of guilt, right?
No, not really. It's a program for him to start a relationship with population and gang activities in there. That's what it's called, SCG. It's Security Task Force Program.
Okay. There's one that sounds similar to it, and I guess people have in California didn't want to do it because they said if they did it, it was an admittance of guilt, but if they didn't do it, they wouldn't get their parole or something. It might be something different.
It's exactly right. If he doesn't, he wouldn't do this program, there was no chance for him to see the PCR or come out in an appeal. So
okay.
It's, of course, yeah, it's like it's a lose or win case. The reason he did it mainly is because I'm successful, like, too. So I could come back in the facility without no problem, and I don't have to be asking for special pass under DOC.
Yeah.
But
so,
now...
So what's happening with him now?
Well, now, with this new ruling in Pennsylvania, the Miller versus Alabama for juveniles, there's a 80% chance it worked with him. Once he finished this program, I got contact here with the Project Innocent from New York because Mark Clemens and Pam they did some legwork for me. So I had these people contact me about a week ago. I just mailed them all my son's transcript because they're going to try to see if they could help him with the Miller versus Alabama ruling now. That is a DNA test. So I mailed them the DNA test that I have in Pennsylvania 15 years ago when they did the DNA test on him, which it came out negative. So this is now is looking a chance, Leona, that my son could come home someday.
Great. That's awesome.
You know, after all the hell we've been through, because you know we've been through hell with PA.
Yeah.
You know, there's a loophole, so there's a chance. It's not 100%, but there's a chance. It all comes out when he comes out of population and see how he behaves. So they're going to look on that.
What I understood, though, is, Anna, that mostly all prisoners who went in when they were teenagers are going to be able to go up for parole now?
Yes. It's a ruling in Pennsylvania. They don't go up for parole. What it is the appellate court ruling is going to see their case again, and then they're going to
evaluate
it? Reinstate his sentences, and most likely in that they could come back with a 20-year sentence, with a 15-year sentence, or time served. It all depends on the case. What I'm looking at my son's case right now, what I discussed with some lawyers here in New York, I'm looking for time served, doing that he doesn't have a bond. Is that he's safe.
What?
In my son's case. He doesn't have a body. He didn't kill nobody. He's there for conspiracy charge.
Oh,
so that's a
okay.
Good part for my son. He's not a murderer. He's a conspiracy. So that's what's looking for him in the middle of ruling Alabama, because he didn't did the crime, but he was convicted like he did the crime.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I got Brett came to New York about a month ago. He wanted to talk to me because I guess now Brett wants. He became a lawyer for the ACR.
Yeah.
So he came and brought me some information with Donna. They were here in New York about a month ago. I met up with them, and they gave me a lot of paperwork. That's the one I took to the lawyer here in New York that I got. And they gave me a little hope. They didn't give me a lot of hope, but they gave me like, ooh, your son's not supposed to be in jail for this crime. I said, I know that. You're not telling me nothing I know. I just want to know, could we bring him home? So
yeah. That's
my focus now. I got Pam working on it. I got Mark working on it. And I got this lady that works with Roger Innocent here in New York. Her name is Chrissy Riley. She took all the paperwork last week. So she has a lawyer who's going to look at it. And if he says paperwork is good, I think he's going to take my case for the Miller ruling Alabama.
So how long has your son Nelson been in now?
He's been there 15 years now.
How many?
15.
15 years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
17.
Yeah.
And the ruling is for juveniles that have 15 years more in the system. So it's another good chance for him, too.
Mm.
So they could come back with the same sentence. You know, it's a loophole. We just got to wait. They all got a 5 years. They have a 5 years in the appellate court to make all the decisions for all the lifers in Pennsylvania. That's all I know.
Now, where did the crime happen? Did it happen in Pennsylvania or in New York?
It happened in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Okay, and they couldn't, you couldn't have him transferred back to New York because they don't have life
because
without.
They don't have life in New York. The most I could bring, if I want to choose to bring him in the state internet change program with inmates, the most I could have taken was to Massachusetts, Virginia, Washington, or California. You know those cities are too far for me to travel.
Yeah. You know what's so strange is this is what I have a problem with in this country. Every state is inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
Every single state. I think they should have them all the same. It should all be consistent. And I don't think that any state should have life without parole or the death penalty unless it's – I still don't think it's even for the death penalty. I think they need to have these institutions. These long-term mental institutions, the residential facilities.
Like in New York City, life is 25. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Once you're 15, you get 10 years probation because life is 25 in New York. But in Pennsylvania, life is life.
In Germany, it's 17 years. And every country has sentences like that except the United States?
Except Pennsylvania, Texas, California. It's only 10 states that has that law, the Commonwealth. And that's sad. That's very
it is.
Sad because look, you see what happened with that kid, Michael Brown. If it was one of us, we would have been in jail. But because if he's a cop, he don't go to jail.
That's it. And that, they get away with it. And people forget. You know what? It goes to show you what a title or a uniform will do. Slap a title on somebody or slap a uniform on somebody, and all of a sudden they become what? They don't have to go to prison or jail. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people out there with titles or uniforms that should be in jail.
You see the people that walk in New York when they see a cop, they put their hands up. That's sad.
Yeah.
That's sad. I think I saw a little girl putting her hands up. Because they say, a cop might kill me. You know, we're not supposed to be scared of the cops, but the cops are being the murderers when they get in a
way.
But
it's a long fighting
for all lifers in Pennsylvania, but there's a loophole for all lifers, and that's what we wanted, including my son. You know how I am? I'm fighting for my son, but I am fighting for other inmates too, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
With my son, I'm a little at ease because he's doing well. They allow him one call per month. So he's been calling me. He called me last week. He looked like he was in a good period. He told me that they just gave him the TV and all the stuff because he's in level two. So he said, Mommy, I got a good feeling that maybe in less than 5 years I might be home if I do good.
That's
but
the kind of hope he needs. So many prisoners today.
But you know how the COs, because my son being in lockdown, unfortunately, it's because of a fight with the COs, not a fight with inmates, you know?
Yeah.
That's the saddest part. My son got to go in there and fight with COs instead of inmates.
I think that's pretty much around the country. Prisoners, they're either set up to fight with prisoners through the prison staff, the employees, or they're harassed and provoked by the prison employees to the point where they end up losing it, or they end up going into solitary.
My son was in Smithfield when those murder happened, and you saw what the guard said, you're next. That's what happened to Fayette. When that kid got raped in Fayette, and the cop looked at my son, he said, you're next. And my son said, no, I'll burn this cell down before I'm next. And that's exactly what he did.
Mm-mm.
He burned down the facility with other inmates. They would say, I'd rather die than let a CO rape me.
Mm-mm.
And I asked him, because I talked to him last week, I said, Pietro, why are you people burning the facility? He told me, Mommy, they raped that kid in front of us. And we couldn't do nothing. And they didn't believe us because they turned off the cameras. There was no evidence. So when they told us, me and Frank and Williams, we looked at each other and we said, we like it. We ain't going home. Let's die all together. That's what they did.
The prison employees raped somebody in front of the prisoners?
Yes, that's why it was a fighting for it.
You know, that's like that scalding that took place in Florida.
Yep.
I mean, the prisoners said that they could hear the man screaming for his life all the way down the block, and here they keep him under scalding. What kind of animals are these people that are overseeing the prisons? I don't understand it. And the U.S. Department of Justice is still investigating that?
So my son told me, Mommy, when I saw trains burn, I grabbed that CEO and I wanted to strangle him with my hands. If they would have not knocked me out the way they did, I would have been here for a murder case for a police officer. Because he was out, Mommy. He was out. And when I noticed it, I said, it was me or him. So they hit me hard. They beat me up hard. But you know what? I saw that I was going to get raped, and it was the only way I could get out of here.
These are the decisions
the inmates have to make when a CEO approaches. Is their life or the CEO life?
That's
what's
happening.
Well, I would like my son to be alive. That's all I say.
That's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Gerald Bowling was saying with the organization All of Us or None. Well, I think about that with prisoners and prison officials or prison employees. It's them or us, because nowadays the employees and the employees of the Department of Correction and the prisons, they're out to harm them. And
when I and I just went to Florida to, I got a drug test. And I said, why are you giving me a drug test? I'm going to see my son through a lame TV. Why do I have to do a drug test? Or is it mandatory? Mandatory for New Yorkers? They looked at me, oh, you're going to start again in Santiago? I see that you like to argue with CEO. I said, no, I'm just asking you what you're doing to me, because a lady just passed by me. Unfortunately, she's white, but you didn't get a drug test to her. So what's the difference between her and me?
Mm-hmm.
Right, sir? My license. It's okay, do the drug test, because I'm a nurse. I don't.
So they had you do a drug test in order to see your son?
Me and Freddie, me and my son. Yep.
They made both of you do a drug test as visitors?
Yep.
I never heard of that.
Yep. All the time, Diona. Every time I go to Pennsylvania, I got to do a drug test with them.
And other visitors were going by you?
And the other visitors were going by me like nothing. I'm looking at my son, and my son is about to explode because he's like me. He's a tallest. And I said, Freddie, you're a college student. Don't mess up your life here. Don't do it. Just let it go. Let it do the drug test. And if you come out positive because I've been ways, just stay out the car. Let me talk to your brother because I haven't seen him in 2 years, and I can't fight him anymore. So we did the drug test. We waited for like 20 minutes. It came up negative. And then they told us, no. Then they told us, you know, have fun. And I looked at him. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to see a TV.
Mm-mm-mm.
But unfortunately, the TV didn't work, so they had to bring him out. Because they wanted me to go home, but I think one of the CEOs was very polite and said that, no, Mr. Gonzalez was waiting for this visit for a year. He can't be terminated now. We're going to have to take him out of population and keep an eye on him. So this visit was contact visit, but the only thing I couldn't think of is nothing.
You know, the one that said that you had waited a long time to see your son, his name was what?
He was the CEO. I think he's the CEO that brings him and takes the food for his place, because he told me, Mommy, he's a nice CEO. He's from New York.
Just going to say, you know the prison employees that do a good job and that are really fair, those are the ones that we have to promote.
Well, my son told me he's been working with the CEO. He said this CEO has never disrespected him. He said he knows his background. He knows that he don't mess with nobody, that he's not there to mess up with him, that the only thing is there to protect him when he has to bring him to places. And my son told me, my son said, he's been doing okay, Mommy. He brings me my food. He brings me my books. I conversate with him. I let him know. I told him that I was innocent. And unfortunately, now I'm guilty of all the situation that I've been forced here, but I'm not guilty of my crime. And he said, yeah, I saw your file, but... He told me, you know, keep your head up. You have a good mom. She's always calling the facility. You know, so he has a good relationship with one of the CEOs only.
And those are the ones that we need to promote. Anyone that we see that's trying to be fair.
I always say they're good CEOs and they're bad. Unfortunately, this one is from New York and he's Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So he came out and he spoke a little Spanish. I mean, Santiago, you know. Your son's a good kid, you know. Some fight, and I say, I met you. If you Spanish like me, you know us Puerto Rican. We fight to the death. And he laughed at my comment. I said, oh, you laughing? I thought you were going to write me up. You know, because, you know, they always write me up the way I speak, you know.
Yeah.
But he seemed nice, and then it was supposed to be for an hour visit, but I guess the CEO extended for 2 hours because he was having a nice conversation, me and him and Freddie. He didn't allow us. They didn't allow us to buy food because he was not supposed to be in population. But they had us in a corner, real nice, and they brought us water and, you know.
How old was your son when he went in?
17.
17.
He's 34 now.
Now, do you think he will be coming out? But do you think when he comes out, will you be getting him any help? Do you think he'll need any counseling?
He needs to go to therapy.
Yeah,
because remember when he went in there was no TV, there was no cell phone, there was none of this techniques. And he got his high school because when he went in, he finished high school. I guess I was up in Virginia with Alex, so that's what I changed the address now. If he's going to come out in parole, he can come back to New York. So I did all the paperwork for Virginia. They approved the Virginia address already. Because, you know, Alex was in the Army, so they are going to put that address. So if he does come out, we will go live with it out in Virginia for a while until he gets to get back. And get counseling. I don't know how he's going to come out, you know?
Yeah, he's going to need some kind of counseling because being in prison today.
And now we've been in prison, Neil, being in the hole for so many years.
Yeah.
It's a biggest mind, no?
Yeah.
And the last, you know, 2 years ago, he wasn't in a good place. But this year, I saw him focusing, you know? Not drooling. Like, mommy, I'm going to win this case. I feel it. I got a lot of people coming to me and say the juvenile. Even he already knew about the Miller and Alabama room before I even mentioned it to him.
Mm.
So he was. He's up. It looks like he's up to his stuff too. You know. Even if he's in the hole, he's paying attention. But you know, we know that it was 15 years hell because he was 3 times hurt really bad in the facility, and I couldn't get to him. You know.
Yeah.
But I always pray to God. I always say my son is in God's hands. That's it. The only God could know if he's going to die or live. Nobody else.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I think it's going to work out.
For the past year, it's been nice. It's been okay with him. No problems. I have not got letters from other inmates saying that my son is in trouble. No. He's been calling the house, writing normal stuff like an inmate supposed to do when he's in the facility, you know?
Yeah.
I was shocked when they gave him the first call. I thought my phone was mistaken when I hear the collect call from Westside. And I'm like, and then allow that, you know, because he never called home.
That must have been a surprise, huh?
Well, I didn't even thought he remembered that number, but I laughed because he said, mommy, that was the number since I was born. How am I going to forget it? I don't know. You've been locked up so much. I thought you didn't forget your house number, you know? I thought he was calling home, so I thought he never knew it. No, that's what I was shocked. He told me, no, mommy, because when you're in level 4, they give you a phone call so you can tell your family you're doing good. And the first thing I told him was about you.
So is he a level 2 or a level 4 now?
No, he's a level 2. He should be in population in December.
All right. That's awesome. That's good.
Oh, and I know the facility he's going to SCI Grayford. The Phoenix, the one that just...
Oh, he's going to Grayford. Okay. Okay. Yeah, Grayford is not.
But the best thing is only an hour and 40 minutes away from New York. I could go every week to see him.
It is closer to New York.
Yes, it is. That's the only prison that is close to my house.
Yeah, SCI Smithfield is way up by Pittsburgh, and I don't. Forest is that that's central Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, Forrester is like most to Harrisburg. Yes, central. That's like 4 hours because I was up there. It almost took me 5 hours to get there.
So 5 hours?
Yeah, where he's at right now, it's 5 hours.
Wow.
But it was wonderful. The CEO was a little polite and formal. I guess he didn't Spanish like me. He was like, bring me water because I was coughing. And I told him that I coughed a lot. I'm locked in. Get asthma. So he brought me my asthma phone. And he told me, okay, she's still sick. Because I was coughing a lot. But it's because I was locked in a room with him, and it was like I was getting no air, and I was getting.
You have that asthma.
Yeah, especially when I'm closed in, that's the worst one, and I got no air, I start coughing.
Mm. So, Anna, tell us now, how is your son, the one that's in the military, how is he doing?
He's back to duty about a year ago. He's working now in the Pentagon. He has a
benefit. All right.
Yeah. My daughter's out there with him. My daughter's been out there for a year. She's in the University of Virginia now.
So was he left with any, after the explosion, was he left with any scars or any?
Yes.
He has, okay.
He has, half of his head is flat, and one of his eyes doesn't open, and he doesn't have teeth yet because they're still working on his jaws. The protocol jaws, it has to take 4 years before they implant the teeth on the plastic jaws, so... He gets a lot of pain, but because he gets his painkillers, still he's still in the medical relief. So, but he's back in duty. He's doing wonderful.
Oh, that's good.
No aftermath after the 3 brain surgery he had. Thank God for that, because I thought he would never walk again or nothing, but I knew he was going to make it anyway, because my kids are tough, Leona. So.
Yeah, I guess to go through something like that, geez. Yeah.
My son had 12 operations in 1 week when he was in coma. 12 operations. And all the operation was 20 hours, 13 hours, 16 hours. It was touch and go with Alex, but, you know, I pray my way, and promising God I do this and I don't do this, and, you know, my way, that way I say. But thank God my daughter went to live with him about a year ago, and they together, so they're good.
You know, a family, through all of the trials and tribulations like that, Anna, it makes a family stronger. I'm sure that it's changed you a lot, too. I'm sure it's
this. What happened to Westside was a wake-up call for my other three kids, okay?
Yeah.
They said, no, I'm going to college. I'm going to stay on the street. I got a 26-year-old Freddie that by 9 o'clock he's sleeping. I said, listen, nigga, you need to get a girl. He said, I'm not ready for that. I'm still going to school. But, you know. Thank God that my other kids did a turnaround and did something stupid, because they saw that, whoa, my son, my brother got 17 and he got life or nothing. I'm going the other way. That I thank God that my other three kids that didn't want to go off the street for nothing.
No. But they say it helps us. It helps us to grow. That's for sure.
Yeah, but you know, I'm still working with this other, you know. This inmate Jimmy that I'm working with, Pam, he's in death row. I think they're going to bring him down. So, you know, it's still a lot of work. It's still a lot of work. You know, it's still
yeah.
Inmates too, because my son is already okay. I don't have no problems with him for now. So I'm focusing on some other inmates in Pennsylvania that really has it real bad. So,
you know, advocacy work with prisoners is never, it's never over.
No, I thought it was going to end. It's like I get more grants now from other inmates, like, please, I'm just tired. It's been 16 years, you know?
I'll tell you, I am really happy not to be in an organization anymore, because...
Yeah, I heard it yesterday. I was on a conference call with Pam and Mark, and they announced, Kevin, they announced that you was retired. I said, yes, retired? No.
Yeah, I feel so much better. I mean, unfortunately, I'm not satisfied with who took it over, but at the same time, I'm happy finally getting down, because I can still advocate for the incarcerated, but I don't have to worry about all the other things that go on.
Like me, that I work with them, but I don't have to worry about all of them.
Exactly.
I work alone. Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
I've always been alone, because I don't want to deal with nobody, because I see the struggle you went through. A lot of people tell me, Anna, do you know? I'm fine the way I am. I let other people help me, and I help them, and we try to work together, but...
You know what happens, really, when you're doing it, trying to do it in an organization, you're getting flack from some of the prisoners, you're getting flack from the families, some of the families who are anxious to get help for their loved one and can't, then you're getting flack from other advocates, and, you know, it's crazy, it's just ongoing.
I got my own headache, that's my son, focus on some other's one, because right now he's in a good place. I haven't heard nothing bad about him almost a year. And I thank God every day for that, you know, that I've been focusing and taking it easy for now until, you know, until something else happened with him, because you know how it is.
Yeah.
They got good days and bad days. Right now he's in a good place, but they could come and see him, come and spit on him or do something to him, and he forget about his FTG program, because that's one thing he told me. I'm going to do everything by the book, Mommy, but if you see thinks I'm pussy, I'll do a turnaround on them. I said, no, don't do that. I want you in the population. I need to hug you. I need to hold you. I don't need this no more.
You know, I think your son is so close to being released that he doesn't want to do anything now to jeopardize that.
Well, he told me to listen, Mommy. The lawyer in here told me, the jail lawyer, you know, he has a jail lawyer that helps him out.
He said,
what my daughter just told me, there's a 90% chance I could go home. I'm not fucking my shit up. If he wants to play with me, I'm going to let him play. But I hope he plays stupid, because I'm going to let him play. I'm going to let him play, because I want to go home with you. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have that mind, because I thought I was never coming out. I'm going to be honest.
Been too long.
I thought I was coming home. That's an open door for me. And I'm going to work on it as soon as I get to that population. I'm going to the law library and do all the paperwork myself. That's what he said.
Yeah, that's good.
He will do it, but he's like me. My sons are like me. When they're going to do something, they do it themselves.
Sometimes that's the only way to get it done. If you don't do it yourself, it doesn't get done.
The only thing he told me is, Mommy, I just want you to go home and rest, and if I need some leg work, I'll let you know. But please stop doing so much leg work. It's time for you to take time for you, he told me. You've been doing too much. You gotta know. You don't think I don't know? I don't hear inmates saying, we just went to Ice Lady. They don't even know that Ice Lady is my mother, so I have to just laugh at them. They say, why are you laughing? I just look at them. I say, only if you knew that lady is my mom. I just don't want to tell you that. And then I say,
well, Anna, I want you to also come back on the show another time, later time, to give us an update.
Just let me know. Send an email like you did yesterday. I got it. And you know, when if I'm home, I'll be calling in for you because it's more about support than anything.
Yeah. Okay.
You know you got me.
And I'm going to keep you and your family in prayer because you've been through a lot as a mother and your son has also.
You too. You know, you're my mother for life. You too.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we'll have Anna Santiago on at another time with us, and we will also be bringing Gerald Bowling back on at a later time to give us an update on their status. And I want to thank everybody for coming on. And if Mary is still with us, Mary, I'd like to have you talk a little bit about your thing now.
Oh, well,
and I don't.
But thank you, Leona. I appreciate it.
Can you give us an update?
We want everyone to know that Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, which is an organization that I founded and direct, has an international lawsuit planned against the United States of America regarding the mentally ill and their treatment and their denial of treatment. The thing is that mentally ill people in America, as well as drug and alcohol users, have the problem of being punished for being sick, punished for having substance abuse problems that are not resolved by incarceration. In fact, the usual outcome is that if they emerge from jail, they emerge back into society much sicker than before they went. And so we know that wealthy people don't have these issues. Wealthy people are not jailed for being mentally ill. They are hospitalized or treated by private psychiatrists at the rate of $250 an hour. Wealthy people are not jailed for alcoholism or drug addictions. They go to one of the expensive treatment centers and they get treated for having drug and alcohol problems. However, it's only the lower class, meaning lower economic class, and also the lower middle class people who actually wind up in jail for drug and alcohol addictions as well as mental illness. They are denied and they are usually punished for having these issues. That is wrong. It's classism at its worst. And it's also race discrimination. For instance, we put people in solitary confinement in America. 80% of the people in solitary confinement right now are black. 60% of those in solitary confinement are mentally ill people. So by far and large, if you're black and mentally ill in America, you're very likely to be the people who are in solitary confinement, especially if you fill two categories. But the abuse is not limited to black people. It happens to Caucasians, it happens to Native Americans, and also it happens to Latinos regularly. Also, people with mental illness are more likely than anyone else in the entire country to be killed by police. Over 50% of the police violence incidents involve people with serious mental illness, even though they comprise such a low percentage of our population. It is said that 1 in 5 people in America have mental illness, but that includes all mental illnesses, even people who have a little phobia about spiders or what have you. That is a mental illness also. But when you consider how many people have serious mental illness, meaning schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, severe depression, when you consider the people who have severe mental illness, that is a much lesser percentage, but they comprise 50% or more of the victims of police violence. So these situations came about partly because people weren't talking about it. You know, there was a time when people didn't talk about being victims of domestic violence, sex abuse at the workplace, or pedophilia. You didn't hear anyone say, my daddy raped me, my priest raped me. You didn't hear anyone say, what did you do last night? My husband beat the crap out of me. Nobody told those things. They were in the closet. But as those situations were brought out of the closet by a few brave people on daytime TV a number of years ago, people were just very interested in what was happening. People were absolutely shocked that anyone would go on daytime TV and tell their personal family history like these people were doing. But it really helped society, because now we have stronger laws against domestic violence, pedophilia, and workplace sexual misconduct. So it worked for them. They have now better protections under the law, whereas there was a time when there were little prosecution in those cases. There is now. And also, people were able to get financial restitution, and things are better in those situations. In every major city, there are women and children's shelters for people who are experiencing domestic violence at their homes. That is an improvement that would not have come about had it not been for the brave individuals who came out of the closet and said, my boss touches my breast when I walk by. If it had not been for the people who made us gasp, the situation never would have been disclosed in the public. So it's up to the people who are going through these things to stand up, get up, and stand up for your rights. So that's what we do here on Human Rights Demand. It's also what we do on National Network in Action. We give people an opportunity to speak up about the issues that confront them. And you must confront the issues that confront you. You must speak out. You must stand up. And so I help you do that. My name is Mary Neal. I'm the director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And we who are the families of people who are mentally ill or who have serious drug and alcohol addictions, and because they're in the lower economic strata, we are conditioned to accept our relatives and ourselves. If you yourself have mental illness or drug alcohol addiction, you're supposed to sit back quietly and accept the idea that treatment is for wealthy people who can afford it, but jails are for you. Jails are for your family members who have drug and alcohol addictions or who have mental illness. I don't accept that, and neither should you. So we're going to sue the United States of America for this in international court, for criminalizing mental illness and for criminalizing substance dependencies, alcohol and drugs. Those are illnesses, and it's not something that should be criminalized. It's not something that should carry a big stigma so much that people won't talk about what's going on. We are tired of our loved ones being used as prison investments. And nothing will change unless we do. We must stand up. We must get up, as Bob Marley said. And we must say that these are sicknesses. It is against the law in the United States and according to the Declaration of Human Rights to prosecute someone and imprison someone for behavior that they don't have the wherewithal to avoid, and that this country has withdrawn psychiatric treatment and has withdrawn drug and alcohol addiction programs. This country has withdrawn the budget that used to go to that. It has withdrawn it and closed down so many mental hospitals, closed down so many community treatment programs, because so many of our representatives are prison investors. And so they withdrew the budget for those programs so that they could earn prison profits. We know it, and the people know it, even if Mary Neal did not tell them. The people know that the budgets are being withheld for psychiatric treatment in hospitals or as outpatients. People know that the budgets are not there for drug and alcohol treatment programs because the representatives want these people in jail if they came from lower economic families. They want them in jail. And we refuse to let this happen anymore quietly. So we are taking it before the United Nations in an action called USA. It's AIMI, A-I-M-I, that's Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, versus USA. And for more information about that, just look up AIMI versus USA. And by the way, you can join the claimants for AIMI versus USA when you call here, the same radio channel, the first Saturday and the first Sunday of each month. So our next claimants meetings are coming up in just a couple of weeks here at Human Rights Demand. Just call this number, 347-857-3293. Again, that's 347-857-3293. The first Saturday and Sunday of each month when we meet and do planning for our lawsuit against the USA for withholding treatment until people prove to be a danger to self and others. By the way, you are the others. I said, you are the others. So whether or not you have mental illness or a relative with mental illness, I want you to know this concerns you too, because you live in the community where people are denied mental health care. So that puts you at great risk for assaults, rapes, robberies, as well as wrongful death. I want you to know that the people who went to the shopping center in Arizona to hear politicians speak did not expect to get shot, but they were. The people who were going about their daily business in Santa Barbara did not know that a young man named Elliot Roger was angry because no one was dating him. They didn't know that he would stab roommates with a knife, run over people with his car, and shoot random individuals with his gun. But he did. I want you to know that the people who went to the movie theater thought they would all go home okay when they went to see the Batman movie. But many of them didn't. So that's what happens when mental illness is untreated sometimes. Usually, mentally ill people are not at all balanced, but we hear about violence done to them on a continuous basis. And we're tired of that too. We want our police officers and prisoner guards trained in crisis intervention team training. We want our police officers and prisoner guards who ignore their training to be held accountable for their crimes against people with disabilities. We want our Americans with disabilities, even mental disabilities, to be afforded every protection under the law. We're tired of people being railroaded into jail instead of into treatment programs if they have serious mental illness or if they have drug and alcohol addictions. This is a waste of our taxpayers' money to the tune of $90 billion a year for incarceration, and over half of the people incarcerated are actually mentally ill. Over half. That resulted from closing hospitals and choking off the money that should go to community treatment. It's not a matter of there not being enough money for hospitals or community treatment. It's a matter of who gets the money. Instead of the money going to treatment, psychologists, psychiatrists, and counselors, instead of the money going to hospital orderlies and social workers, it's going, all of it is going to prison investors. And we're ready to shift mental illness and drug and alcohol addiction back to the health center to be considered as health disorders instead of as crimes. And so I thank you, Leona, for giving me this opportunity to speak to your audience about Amy versus USA. That's Amy versus USA. And we have a few minutes, so I would like to hear what your guests have to say about that. Mr. Bowling and also our other good friend, Anna, what do you say about Amy versus USA in international court?
My opinion is right. I think mental patients should not be in the facility. In my opinion, mental patients should be in a mental ward hospital, not in a facility. They don't have
I totally agree.
They don't have the right medicine to have these mental inmates in the facility. Because I saw what they did to my son when they're trying to overdose him with medication that they didn't even know what they were giving him. And because I was a nurse, I saw it in my son's eyes, and I had to report it. Because a lot of these facilities, these are student nurses, student doctors that are giving these inmates medication without doing no physical tests on them and everything.
Thank you, Anna. You know what Anna just said is so true. They have people giving medication that are so, they're not even experienced. And they have these contracts with these people that are not doing the services that they should be. And, you know, Anna, I'm glad you brought it up because that's something that I've been thinking about for a long time.
I've been thinking about that since I saw my son overdose in the facility without him knowing it.
Exactly. Exactly. And Mary, I'll tell you, Mary, what you're doing, I have to say this. What you're doing, Mary, is so awesome.
Yes,
because
it's
something that needed to be done years and years ago. And for you to take on a task like you're taking on and bringing this to the world court, you know, and doing this, this is, I mean, I've never seen a citizen so dedicated to the cause to be able to take these steps.
More people need to
take the initiative to do that and to at least give you the support that you need in doing so, because you're doing something that we all should be doing. We all should be getting together. We all should be learning about this and doing something about it.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, it's not as easy.
Leona, this is Gerald again. I would like to commend you on the job that you're doing. And just sitting back and listening about the mental illness that we suffer from being encaged in solitary confinement or whatever kind of confinement that we're in, and that the unnatural process there. I remember these two guys. One name was E.T. and one name was Steve. And these brothers would like take turns. Steve would say, "Simple as that." For three whole days, whatever medication he was on, he would do it for three whole days, and then ET would start. And then you started to see that the COs, you know, I mean, that was we call this in jail bitten. That was a bit for the day, you know, taking advantage of them, calling them names, da da da, you know, and all around the circumstances. And I'm definitely for you to do this. I'm gonna stand behind you. When you do this, because I want to see this push forward, because when we go in there, we may be sane, but when we come back out, we're touched a little bit. So,
exactly.
Yeah, we definitely need a some kind of transformation in that department.
It takes
well,
a lot.
It's a matter of how rich people are treated and how poor people are treated. Understand that the battle for mental health care and drug and alcohol treatment is purely a battle between the rich and poor. Because rich people don't go to jail when they have a drug alcohol problem. Rich people don't go to jail when they have mental illness. Only poor people and lower middle class people do. And it's time for us to stand up together and say no more. So please look online for Amy versus USA, that's AIMI versus USA, and share the links. Thank you.
I will do that.
Still on my page.
Thank you, everyone, for coming on, and thank you, Mary, for what you're doing, and Gerald and Anna. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you, Leo, because, you know, it's here about support. I got a loved one behind bars, so it's about support.
Yeah, thanks for giving us a voice out here when the air is nothing for us, really.
We'll have you back. We really want you back because we need to hear the updates on everything.
I'm going to email him because he works in Pennsylvania. Maybe me and him could work.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Leona, and thank you, please, Anna, and also Mr. Bowling. And we just really appreciate you coming on today to Human Rights Demand. We appreciate the audience who will listen to this tape. And you can just look on Leona's Facebook wall and see the link where she announced this program today.
Yes.
Because that is the link to this show. And we ask you, Anna, and we ask you, Mr. Bowling, to share your interview with your listening audience. Share your interview.
Okay.
All right? Because it's on Leona's Facebook wall, Leona Brando, Brandao, who was your host today. And I thank
you. It will also go on Google. It will be on Google as well.
I'll get it.
Okay.
This is my page today. So
share the link also, radio audience. Share the link and help us to spread the word about Mr. Bowling's reentry program, about Anna's son and the program he's in that she's excited about, and also Ms. Leona Brando's work as a human rights advocate. Share the word by sharing the link. It's also on my Facebook wall. My name is Mary Neal, N-E-A-L, otherwise known as Mary Loves Justice. So get the link and share it. And, you know, when you do that, when you share the links to these radio programs, you help other people to know what you know. And the more you know, the better off you are. The Bible says, my people perish. Perish, that means die. For the lack of knowledge. Don't let your friends die from the lack of knowledge. Many of them have relatives who are in the Philadelphia area and need to be a part of Mr. Bowling's program. Many people across this whole country have mental illness and they need to be a part of assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill. They need my services. Don't wait on them to ask you. Share the link. So we want to thank you for being on the show today. I want Ms. Leona Brando to give you a final goodbye, and then we will look forward to your returning tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and that will be Human Rights Demand for Justice. Human Rights Demand for Justice, tomorrow at 3 p.m. on this same channel, which you can reach either by telephone or by link. You can listen to the live show either way, and you can listen to the tape show whenever you feel like it. So, Ms. Leona Brando, I go ahead and give it to you. I guess she's already signed off, ladies and gentlemen. So we wish you a good day, and we thank you for coming. God bless you.
I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I